This is John Williams. Paul Nolte joins us now, a regular guest as the portfolio manager at Kingsview Investment Management. You can visit kingsview.com. Hi, Paul. Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, John. Enjoying the blustery early winter weather?
I'm indoors, but earlier this morning I did see some trees doing things they don't normally do. Is it windy where you are today?
Absolutely, and it's windy on Wall Street as well. You know, it's interesting when you take a look at the markets and what's been happening over the last couple weeks. And the wind seems to be blowing fair for a lot of the tech names, the S&P 500, and kind of chilly and ill wind, if you will, for much of the rest of the market. So the value stocks, small cap, international, and so on. So you've got this bifurcation in the market. I think that's been really kind of the hallmark of the market really since the pandemic bottom a year and a half ago now.
Yeah, although I thought that was changing. I thought the rest of the market was sort of catching up with the FANGs or the stay-at-home stocks.
Yeah, it did until two, 3 months ago or so. And then we started to see interest rates come back down again. They're now back up a little bit. And we saw some of the economic data coming in a little bit worse than expected, indicating that maybe the economy was not opening as quickly as everybody wanted to or anticipated. And I think that's really now at the heart of the Fed discussion and what the Fed's going to be doing over the next few months with interest rates.
You see, the Peloton numbers were kind of interesting. Speaking of the stay-at-homes, Peloton zoomed up, no pun intended, and then really has had a fall of late. I don't know where they should be in the market after a pandemic, but it's not as high as it once was, is it?
No, and you know, and that's where you know you take a look at many stocks in the marketplace, and even some of the more popular names, like the old names like a Microsoft or an Apple. Some of the new names like Rivian that was highlighted earlier, Peloton, Zoom, and some of the valuations on them and the expectations that are being built into a lot of the stocks are huge. And it reminds us a little bit of the late 90s with a lot of the dot-com stocks when you take a look at a Rivian that has produced very little in the way of vehicles, but is at
Zero.
One time was actually worth more than Volkswagen.
Well, what was the little trivia factoid that somebody dropped on us this week? The three most valuable car companies in the world are number one, Tesla, number two, Toyota, number three, Rivian. You can't buy a Rivian vehicle right now. They're number three. So
right. And Tesla's only making 500,000 cars a year.
But here's what you wrote on Monday. The employment report was very good on all fronts. Wage growth was also solid, above 5% on an annual basis. That's some good news, right?
It is. And that's, I think, part of the flip side of that is, as we all know, prices are up, too. So with that wage growth at 5% is about equal to or a little bit behind what some of the inflation numbers are. So even though wages are growing, prices are growing at about the same pace. And like I said, that's one of the things that the Fed is wrestling with. You know, or do we look at the employment numbers? We'd like to maybe have them a little bit lower. Maybe we keep interest rates where they are. We're worried about inflation. Maybe we should be raising rates to stem that tide. And that's the push-pull, I think, that's going to be going on over the next few months with the Federal Reserve.
Well, I don't know what you're hearing, but where we were talking about inflation a lot, a few months ago, now I hear people complaining about inflation, and that's the new twist. I think people really are starting to feel it, and I think they're getting pretty angry about it.
They are, and I think to that point, I think that's why we're seeing a lot of buying in retail right now. So everybody's trying to hurry up and buy today because they know that tomorrow prices might be a little bit higher. So when you look at the Walmarts, the Macy's, Home Depot, Target, those numbers are up significantly over where they were prior periods. So there's still a lot of buying out there, even at current prices. So you're not seeing consumers backing away from those higher prices and saying, yeah, maybe I'm not gonna spend those dollars today.
This is Paul Nolte from Kingsview Management. Well, Wealth Management, what do you think about this Christmas? Do you think it's going to be good for retailers? I presume it is, huh?
Yeah, no, I think it will be. It's starting certainly earlier. We saw some of the commercials ahead of the Halloween holiday even so. But I think what they're going to be doing this year is they're not going to have the huge sales on Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, that they have historically. They're going to try to smooth that out a little bit more because they don't want to have the crowds. A lot of people have moved online. And so I think what you're going to see is a pretty good Christmas season, but it's not going to be that the huge rush that we have seen historically that starts right after Thanksgiving.
Well, it's a supply and demand issue too, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, some stores are not doing so well as far as having stuff on the shelf. Others faring a little bit better. Absolutely. And so that's part of the reason why you're trying to even that flow out so that you can keep up with the demand. And again, a lot of people have moved online as well.
Portfolio manager at Kingsview Investment Management. Kingsview.com is the website. Paul Nolte, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. We'll talk to you soon.
Ian Schur from CNET's here again. Hi, Ian.
How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. There's a survey out. I don't know if there's much surprise in this about the way people use Twitter. What do you see in this?
Yeah, so Pew did this really interesting survey where they figured out that, first off, the vast majority of Twitter actually comes from the top 25% of users. So in terms of volume, 97% of all tweets, including replies, retweets, quote tweets, everything, just comes from a small number of people. And that's important to keep in mind because sometimes I feel like, especially in the tech world, but broadly, people kind of start not realizing that Twitter is not representative of everyone. And so one of the things that it also found was that 69% of people who report getting news on Twitter, among the 69% of people who report getting news on Twitter, two-thirds of them have at least some trust in the accuracy of that news. And that's important as well, because we're talking about a very high number of people who are looking to Twitter for their news, and a very high number of people trusting what they read on Twitter, which is not always the safest thing to do.
Not the safest thing to do, but I'm sorry, when you follow news or get news on Twitter, you're following sites. So if it's the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or Fox News, whoever your source is, they'll tweet out news. So it's not Twitter that's in question, is it?
That's part of the issue here, right, is that one of the conversations we've been having and been writing about on CNET now for quite a while is the question of how we can trust what's posted on social media and who we can trust. And part of what has been really fascinating is that we've seen people who are trying to cause trouble using social media extremely effectively to actually crowd out the voices of, you know, mainstream news sources. And instead, offering different points of view, which can be good sometimes, but also sending out disinformation, which in some cases is actually dangerous to people's health, might cause violence, all sorts of other stuff.
One other thing about this, the reason I maybe said that this wasn't all that surprising, they asked people how or why they use Twitter. And did I read it right, that the number one reason is just for entertainment, not for news?
Yeah, I mean, that's the one thing to keep in mind is that Twitter has always had this kind of, you know, focus on the entertainment world. Just like Instagram is very popular for photos, right? TikTok very popular for dances and music. When it comes to Twitter, it's been very wrapped up in the entertainment industry, sports, politics, and news. And all those kind of go together. So it's not a surprise at all that is what most people say that they're going to it for.
What are you telling people about shopping this Christmas on Black Friday?
Well, among other things, you need to prep. You need to be really ready. I know it's a week away, 8 days away, but truth is that because of the supply chain madness that we've all been hearing about, you need to start planning now. It's not about doorbusters and all that type of stuff. And in fact, the good news is that some retailers will actually offer you guaranteed pricing through the holiday shopping season. So, for example, Target, Walmart, Best Buy, they all have some form of a price match guarantee where if you buy something today and then it goes down in price, let's say a week from now, if you go to them and say, hey, this dropped in price, can you give me the refund? They'll give you the difference. So they are trying to come up with ways to make it all work, but it's going to be a very interesting holiday. Already, my wife and I are struggling to find some of the toys that we were after for our kids, and I imagine that's going to be the case for the entire holiday.
If you order something online and then they drop it off at your house and then somebody steals it, we'll probably see a bunch of that again this year. Some of your colleagues wrote about what to do about that. What are you guys saying?
Yeah, for the most part, I mean, first off, it's actually the most interesting thing has been ways to avoid this whole problem altogether. Because, you know, porch piracy generally seems to be something that is a crime of opportunity, right? Someone sees the box on your front porch and they see an opportunity and for whatever reason they decide to go get it. And the truth is that there are ways to avoid that now. One of them, for example, is that if you sign up with UPS or FedEx, you can actually tell them to reroute a box to a holding station where you can pick it up on your way back from work or getting groceries or whatever else, so you don't have to have it on your porch. You can also ask the delivery people from Amazon to maybe drop off the package on the backside of your house. And then one of the other things to keep in mind is that a lot of the retailers out there, including Target, Walmart, Best Buy, as I mentioned before, they have now an ability for you to shop online but pick up at the store, and they'll even walk it out to your car. So it's getting a lot easier to not have to worry about the boxes on your porch, which unfortunately is the way that it seems to be going, because this porch piracy thing just doesn't seem to be ending otherwise.
I forget who the retailer is. Is it Amazon that has the lockers on the sidewalks in Chicago and proposals for more, sometimes on Park District property, and that's not being entirely well received here. Are you hearing that across the country?
It is something that they have been trying to do a lot. And Chicago is an unusual case in having those lockers in the public domain, as it were. It's something that's also being explored in New York. And, of course, the Whole Foods stores that Amazon owns anyway, they're doing it there. But the reality is that these lockers are effective. And it's so effective, actually, that I've seen Home Depot start to use them and other people as well. So I imagine that this is something that we may see more of. I think the question we all have to ask ourselves is what we want out of all of this, right? Do we want to have these, you know, do we want to avoid these porch piracy problems by using these lockers? Obviously, a number of people find them useful, but also where do we want them to be? Because part of the whole point behind them is that they are more convenient locations than having to go to, you know, an Amazon store or a Whole Foods store or wherever else.
One more story. Facebook is accused of misleading the public about some ads. What's that?
Yeah, what's happening is that there is a coalition of 46 advocacy groups who say that that Facebook should end all surveillance advertising to children and adolescents. And what this comes up from is that, you know, you can have a Facebook account at the age of 13 or beyond. And the reality is that even though Facebook has promised that anyone under the age of 18 is not being targeted by ads, there's actually a lot of evidence that they are and that this is something that is not being taken care of well. So we're seeing a lot of advocacy groups now trying to push on Facebook to say, look, you need to cut this stuff out. You need to keep kids out of your advertising systems until they're 18 at least.
Ian Schur, editor-at-large at CNET. Always a pleasure. Thank you, Ian.
Thank you.
Hi, it's John Williams. You know, our hometown this week, this month, is Joliet, the third largest city, the city of steel and stone. It was the one that the early settlers, what was it, Joliet and was it Marquette, coming up the DuSable River, first saw as a mound on a hill. They called it Mount Joliet. Now we know it as Joliet, the mound, the mount, has been leveled over the years, but there sits Joliet to this day at 55 and Route 80. That's where my family lives, where I grew up. On a phone line right now is the president of the Joliet Chamber of Commerce, Jen Howard. Hi, Jen. It's John. You're on the air. How are you?
I'm good, John. Thanks so much for having me on today. So
let's talk a little bit about your town. If people say, tell me about Joliet, what do you say first?
Well, you know what? I say, first of all, we're a tight community. We're a small, big town. And then as the chamber president, I like to just really stress that our business community is a very tight and supportive entity in our region. Whether it is healthcare, like Amitas, St. Joe's in Joliet, and Silver Cross Hospital, or large corporations like ExxonMobil and Citgo, or our educational institutions, Joliet Junior College, the first junior college in the country, or University of St. Francis, and then small retail and restaurants. They all support one another, and I see it at every monthly event that we as a chamber host.
Yeah, I like that esprit de corps, and I think that the smart cities have that attitude, don't they? I mean, I think that was a good strategy pre-pandemic, but in 2020, you know, we all need to stick together sort of attitude, right?
Absolutely. And during the pandemic, we did have a lot of town, we hosted some town halls, which were virtual. And again, we had everyone coming together from every industry and listening and conversing with all different types of leaders from our community.
So you guys have, do you have one gambling boat, riverboat, or do you have two casinos in Joliet?
We have two. We have one right at downtown Joliet, and then also Hollywood out on Route 6.
I think you're the only city in the state with two, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so.
And so the downtown revitalization is the sort of thing that all cities about the size of Joliet have had to really work on. Talk to me a little bit about what downtown Joliet is like.
Well, you know, it's so interesting because I just left a meeting with a small group of 10 business leaders and owners, the university president, the city economic development director. We met this morning to discuss a city comprehensive plan. A lot of it revolves around the downtown and taking advantage of the riverfront. But this is a group of passionate Joliet residents that want to see the city prosper for future generations. This group has no other agenda than to see an improvement in Joliet through the years.
Yeah. Well, you do have a river right there. The beautiful new courthouse, the old rail station, which I think now has a restaurant in there, too, or banquet hall, right?
A brewery.
Yeah.
Yes, we have. My Grain Brewery is right in there. You can't forget to mention the Rialto Square Theater, which is the jewel of Joliet, which is downtown. Joliet Junior College has a state-of-the-art culinary facility right downtown. We've got the baseball stadium. And then we have the Daniel Burnham-designed Joliet Public Library that's going through a $6 million renovation as we speak.
Talk to me about a few things for the holidays. Maybe folks in the area will put Joliet on their schedule of things to do. You've got the 2021 Santa Fun Run and Walk coming up, right?
Yes, we do. That will be our second annual, hosted by the Joliet Chamber and presented, sponsored by City Center Partnership. So this will take place right downtown. It's a family fun run and walk. In attendance will be Santa, the Grinch, and other local mascots. We'll have a hot coffee bar, fire pit, Auntie Anne's hot pretzels for all participants. There will be prizes for the first five that cross the finish line, including an Apple Watch for the first one that makes it in.
Well,
so it's very
it suddenly got competitive. And then tell me about Martinis and Mistletoe. What is that event?
Okay, so Martinis and Mistletoe is a very festive and traditional event. It's put on by our Council of Working Women within the Chamber of Commerce. And so that will be held on December 6th at the historic Jacob Henry Mansion. And this is so unique because we have 11 vendors from the restaurant and bar and hospitality industry that will provide a signature holiday cocktail for everyone to sample, and all the participants will vote on their favorite, and the winner receives the traveling martini glass trophy to keep for the year. But it's a very festive and fun event.
Who couldn't be prouder to have the traveling martini trophy? I think a lot of people would
exactly
lay claim to that if they could. You know, I'm just looking at the list of the restaurants. I just have a few seconds left, but if you're looking for dining, boy, my family used to always go to Sills in Rockdale. I see that on on a Joliet list of restaurants as well. Where else do folks like to eat out in Joliet?
Well, you know what? We have still our staples. Like you said, Sills, Al's, Heroes. Heroes West is a great community restaurant. And then we have some newer ones, Cut 158 and Juliet's, which is downtown Joliet. So we do have a strong restaurant group here, and that's what prompted us to start the Joliet Region Food and Beverage Association. Which brings together restaurants, bars, but also anyone in the industry, any vendors or contractors. We just had our first meeting with over 25, and we had representatives from Coca-Cola. And we just want to be able to share ideas within the industry after what they all experienced during the pandemic.
I'm looking at your Bites and Bars restaurant guide, and it's thick. So if you're thinking about some place to eat or drink or celebrate, Joliet ought to be in consideration. Jen Howard is the president of the Joliet Chamber of Commerce. Nice to talk to you, Jen. Continued success over there.
Okay, well, thank you so much for having me on.
Nicely done. It's 12:44 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Portillo's first earnings report since going public is out. It shows a decrease of 8.8% in operating income year over year, blamed on the cost of goods, labor, occupancy, and operating expenses. At the same time, the company reported a 6.8% increase in same-store sales. Portillo saw a 15.3% jump in revenue over the last year to $138 million. Portillo's shares were trading several percent lower at mid-morning after the earnings report. The United Auto Workers strike against John Deere is over. Union members approved a new contract that will give them 10% raises immediately, ending a month-long strike for more than 10,000 employees. The vote was 61% in favor of the deal, which was the third contract proposal. It made only modest changes to the company's incentive pay plan, which had been a sticking point. The company and union will work out details of when to return to work. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
With the business of food, then, here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, I'm still thinking about that martinis and mistletoe thing. That's,
yeah.
Sounds interesting. Oh, a reminder, John, that tomorrow I will be featuring a game-changing recipe for mashed potatoes during this time period.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. Wait a minute. So when again?
Tomorrow, right now, tomorrow, this time tomorrow.
12:46 Friday. Mm-hmm. Game-changing mashed potato recipe.
Yeah. If you're in charge of making the mashed potatoes for Thanksgiving, you will want to hear this one. It's a good one. I know I've said this before, so please pardon the repetition, but growing up on a farm is, it's just awesome. A farm or ranch offers endless opportunities for kids to play.
A kid is going to see the farm as a big playground.
But it's a dangerous playground.
And then it's up to the adults to try to keep the child out of the hazardous areas.
And too often, we on the radio have had to share the sad news of a child being badly injured or killed in a farming accident. People at the National Farm Medicine Center in Marshfield, Wisconsin, whose mission is farm safety, were wondering whether the news stories of these tragedies change behaviors. Scott Heiberger is the communications director.
It seems like you do catch farmers' attention, you know, at least for a while. It really hits home. And so, you know, this project wants to see if articles describing trauma incidents involving children in any way affects how they look at safety on their farm and maybe how they teach safety and approach safety with their children.
And a sign the messages may not be getting through is the number of accidents involving tractors.
One thing that's unfortunate is that there are a handful of injury themes that you continue to see, like kids riding on the lap of a parent or grandparent, and then they get run over.
And if something bad does happen?
It is something you carry the rest of your life as a parent. You'll always ask, you know, could I have done anything differently? Did I miss something?
So on this National Rural Health Day, if you're a farm parent or a grandparent, the National Farm Medicine Center in Marshfield would love to have you take part in its survey. You can get to them at marshfieldresearch.org, marshfieldresearch.org. Chicago Board of Trade is a mixed bag now, with wheat up about a penny. Soybeans are down 11. Corn is trading about 2 cents lower. From the farm to your belly, today is National Vichyssoise Day. I had to look it up. That is thick soup made with pureed leeks, onions, potatoes, cream, and chicken stock, usually served cold. Okay, that's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Amy Guth, we have 52 stories to discuss.
And indeed we do.
Okay, so I don't know what order you want to go, but I really am intrigued by, I mean, hello, Ford. They said they want to make computer chips. What a good idea, right?
Yeah, I thought this was such an interesting story. The Associated Press is reporting that Ford is in talks with a computer chip maker called Global Foundries. You know, this is kind of that classic move of vertical integration that we've seen from, you know, Wrigley buying their Mint Fields and beyond. We've seen this from so many big companies. It makes perfect sense given the landscape, given how many automakers have been impacted by the chip shortage. So should be noted that at this point, it's at the status of a memorandum of understanding, according to a spokesperson. So they haven't really signed it and the ink's not dry yet. But if this deal should go through, it would be, you know, a huge boon for Ford, certainly. The Global Foundries, they're based a couple hours outside of New York City, but they say on their website they have factories in the U.S., Germany, Singapore, 15,000 employees. They're one of the world's largest independent semiconductor makers. So it's, you know, it's not a small company. It would be a lot of firepower for Ford for sure to get their products out the door.
So Global Foundries is the company, and Ford's going to may acquire that company. Is that it?
Well, it would be a partnership that could look a lot of different ways, and that's kind of part of what we have to wait and see what it will look like. But essentially, they could simply just be boosting supplies with like a joint development sort of deal, that kind of arrangement. That could be joint manufacturing through, you know, really widely in the meaning a lot of jobs and things like that. I think this one is really significant because the Ford F-150 is such an important vehicle. It has a high sales number. A lot of people buy that particular truck. And so many of them were, you know, we were looking at earlier in the pandemic that Ford F-150s were being built and then just kind of parked because they didn't have that truck. So that would be a significant revenue boon for Ford if this deal were to go through.
Starbucks is in some sort of partnership with Amazon Go.
Yeah, they are. I thought this was a really interesting kind of experiment. So it's in New York for now. We'll see if we get one here. But it's that Amazon Go store. You and I have talked about that. There used to be one right there in the same building as WGN Radio. We'd walk in and sensors would charge you for whatever you took. It felt very weird to go in. I tried it out and I kept going, I need to tell someone I'm taking this. Are you sure I'm being charged? Like, what's going on? But they're doing a joint project with Starbucks as an experiment. You would still have to pay for the Starbucks part. So it's not completely just grab coffee and walk out of there. But they're trying to see if that sort of those convenience items would be of appeal while you're in a Starbucks. While you're getting coffee, would you also maybe pick up a sandwich? Then you leave with that and you're automatically charged by sensor for your things that you've picked up that aren't coffee. So it's an interesting experiment.
But you still have a barista pouring your drink,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You do. Yep. You still have a barista. And so for that part, you would still have to pay just like you would in any other Starbucks. But I would assume that would be a cashless operation. I know Starbucks has done some experimenting with that. But given that they're partnering there with an Amazon Go, I imagine they would try to streamline that payment as much as possible.
CVS, what's the news for the drugstore?
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's really interesting how retail has been trying to adapt to how consumer behavior very quickly adapted during the pandemic. CNBC has reported that CVS Health announced earlier today that it's closing 900 stores over the next 3 years. They say that is due to they want to invest in where the shoppers are, and they're seeing, you know, increasing digital numbers, so they're adjusting to more people buying online. They're going to close about 300 per year. They have not yet said where those would be. So what we're looking at, that's about 9% of their stores. They have 10,000 in the U.S., so enough to be impactful, but it wouldn't necessarily knock CVS out of your reach, right? They didn't say how many workers would be out of a job, but they did say that they will help those impacted to work at another store or find another opportunity. But it's really interesting to see a retail chain, how they've been evolving. They acquired Aetna, you know, health insurance provider. They've been putting they have about 1,000, more than 1,000 MinuteClinics already. They're expanding. They're trying to have 1,000 health hub locations, which is very similar. You know, to have these more than just a store, but then also closing some of the retail locations to be more about selling products online. But then the locations that would be, that would still be around, would be more about healthcare on site and doctor's visits and things like that.
Speaking of retail, give me 60 seconds on Macy's.
Yeah, very similarly, Macy's has announced, they had already announced that they were going to have some store closures, but they said that they're going to announce 10 store closures in January. They're going to delay some others. There was a batch of 125 they said that they were going to close, but they're scaling that back a little bit. But they're also experimenting with smaller format stores. So instead of having that big Macy's being the anchor tenant at a mall, they're looking at smaller stores. And interestingly, they did say that the places, the cities where their digital operations are highest, where they're seeing the most digital revenue, also have a physical location. So I thought that was kind of interesting that they're nonetheless going to be paring back.
Yeah, I could see how one would help the other. The presence of one would help the other, that's for sure. Amy Guth joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.